Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. It's the Fight In.
Interesting, mate, yeah.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, Nathan Lee Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
And I'm really trying to sound positive, and I'm putting on this positive tone. I don't feel that way, but fake it till you make it, right, guys?
Exactly.
Right, guys?
Yeah, let's do that.
Bardi, what happened against Southampton, Bardi?
I think it was a mixture of arrogance and stupidity, and we just lost a little bit of respect for Southampton, and our midfield just kind of disappeared. The gaps opened up, and there was just big green patches of grass for Southampton just to boot the ball into and turn us every time, and we just needed to be a bit smarter. And I don't know whether that's down to Pochettino being far away from the action, but you'd think from where he was and being in constant contact with the bench, he could tell them that. But it was almost like our midfield ran out of legs, and this is kind of where I put the fault for the game.
That's so you made some interesting points there. But what I want to talk about first is really how has this game made you feel? So basically, there's been this ultimate meltdown on Twitter, on social media in general, Spurs related. I feel like a lot of our fans have gone into a massive downward spiral. Top four's done. The season's over. We're going to get caught. And I get it. Like, I felt, after that game yesterday, I felt so low with Spurs. And that may have been due to the fact that I've been essentially bedridden for a week with man flu and feeling very sorry for myself and going stir crazy having not left the house. But I really felt like, yes, I felt so low after Spurs yesterday. How does Tottenham affect your mood? And is this fully justified? Nathan, how were you feeling after that game?
I mean, not great. I am generally quite good at only allowing the positive side of football to affect my mood. Obviously, like that doesn't work in total. And obviously, I was pissed off yesterday and I was upset. But I generally cope all right with it. And this season especially, I've been quite... it's probably been my season in a long while that I've been sort of quite apathetic and quite distant from what's happening week in, week out. Obviously, you know, I still live and breathe Tottenham and I still care about what's going on, but just on a weekly basis, I've gone, yeah, I sort of know where we're headed. I know what our problems are and I know they're not going to get resolved right now. And I know that there's a lot of positive and I've just not cared that. I didn't care that much about the Burnley result, you know. But then this one, it feels very much like a momentum change simply on a mathematical table-based basis. But yeah, I'm coping all right. How are you?
I kind of want to come back to a point you just made there about this season being a little different. But Bardi, let's just hear from you first. How did that result affect you? You've had a complete shutdown from football over the last 24 hours, basically, haven't you?
Yeah, this is the first time I've actually spoken and thought about football since 4 minutes before the final whistle. My stream died pretty much as Hugo Lloris was trying to get near the free kick. So since that moment, I closed everything down. And I've either been in the kitchen cooking or playing Resident Evil. But this morning, a birthday card arrived from Tottenham. I haven't even opened it yet. And I'm debating whether or not to. Because on the front, it says another great celebration. I'm just like, I don't care. I don't like you. I don't want. And it's like, I guess it's like your partner cheats on you. And then they turn up with some flowers the next day. It's like, you can throw whatever you want at me. I don't like you now. And there's nothing you can do that can help that.
What you should do is take a video of yourself setting fire to that envelope, and we'll tweet it at the Spurs official account from the Extra Inch account for the hashtag numbers. That is the best use of that birthday card right now. But can I just quickly come back to Nathan's point? Because this season has been different, and I think there are a couple of reasons why. Firstly, Wembley. And I think you're both like me in that you're... Bardi, you've stuck with it. You're a season ticket holder. You've stuck with it, and you've been to Wembley a fair amount. And kudos to you for doing that. I guess it's because you only live up the road, so it's easier for you.
Yeah, it's been quite useful. Wembley's half an hour door to door away from my house.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's the distance of travel is actually a bit closer to me. But getting out after this game makes it about the same as getting home from White Hart Lane. But I hate it. I hate the experience at Wembley. I hate Wembley Stadium. I don't like the lack of atmosphere. I don't like the journey. I hate everything about it. And so I've been a couple of times this year, and that's it. I've given up on Wembley. And that has, I must admit, that has really changed the way I feel about Spurs this year. And I think possibly that's what Nathan's getting at as well. But it's not just that. It's the new stadium. Not that I'm bothered by the delays to the stadium, because actually... I'm not going to be a season ticket holder. It's not going to affect me every week. And I know that sounds terrible, you know, it's not my problem kind of thing. But I kind of get that big building projects overrun, and that's kind of fine. I'm not that bothered about it. But the constant updates, the fan accounts tweeting regular updates, the Spurs official updates, the outrage at any further delays, I'm so sick and tired of it, to the point where now it's been announced that we're going back for whichever game it's going to be, I'm actually not that excited about it anymore, and that's a real shame. I feel like I've just had my absolute fill of this stadium project.
I have to say that this year has been the first year where there's almost like it's too saturated. The social media reaction and commentary on every passing thing is, I'm tired of it now. I'm tired of the constant references to the cheese room. I'm tired of the picture from the press release. I'm tired of every single game is now live or die. We lose to Burnley. That's it. Tottenham will never win anything. We beat Dortmund, and we're the greatest team. We're going to win the Champions League. And it's this kind of swing from one moment of ecstasy to one moment of depression, which we go through as fans, but now everything seems to be just like under the magnifying glass, and vloggers and podcasts. And I guess maybe we're equally as responsible for this as well, because we react to the games and we put our voices out there. But this season, I am tired. I'm tired of this season. From maybe it was the fact that we went into the season straight from a World Cup. And as someone whose team, whose country they support wasn't at the World Cup, I had to endure everything else that was happening that I wasn't involved in, straight into a season where we lost 9 players immediately. I'm just tired of this season. This season can get in the bin.
Oh, you're so right. And Moussa Sissoko's face in a pancake did not help matters, I must admit.
I mean, what is that? What is pancake Tottenham?
I know, faces? I get that it's not for me. It's not aimed at me. It's aimed at children and fine. But seriously, like, just no. And if you're going to make that video, at least have the players there, you know? This is just a random person flipping some pancakes and making faces. It was so bizarre. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about pancakes any longer. Nathan...
I would like to add, before become too negative, there is still plenty of good, nice things to have come out of this season. As much of a mess as it has been in parts, there's still some things which we can be excited about and be very positive about.
Yeah, but let's come back to that, because I want to make sure that we end on a positive note for my own mental health as much as anything. But something you touched on there, I really I'm intrigued with, Bardi, and I want to tug a little bit deeper at that thread. So that's the World Cup. I think that has, as well as the stadium, I think the World Cup has had a big impact on the season for Spurs fans in two ways. Firstly, it was a massive high in the summer for Spurs and England fans. And that's that in the Venn diagram, that's a huge number of us. We felt so united in the summer and it felt great. And then we had that instant, oh, and by the way, half your players aren't going to make it back in time for the start of the season. So it was like, great, this is Spursy. This is just our luck. This is exactly what we didn't need kind of thing. We got off to a bad start and then we didn't sign anyone. So it was like, yeah, double whammy there. Nathan, has that fed into it at all for you? Why do you feel so different about this season in particular? Can you put your finger on it?
Yeah, it's all those factors. There's that famous line in Bruges where Tottenham are compared to purgatory, and I feel that this season is the most purgative. I don't know what the word might be for that. It just feels like everything is on delay, is on a pause. We haven't signed any players, we don't have a home, and we're just waiting for things to tick over. And I don't know. Maybe all we need to apply to that is patience. But I feel that this mood that we are focusing on right now is perhaps the reason for our poor performances of late. I think that if we feel this way, it's probably not unreasonable for the players to feel similarly. And if they're, you know, if the stadium is coming up for their next home match, if, you know, the Champions League is coming up in a couple of weeks and, you know, they're just sort of posturing on trying to take third or fourth, it's hard to show up against Southampton at 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
And I think that psychology is such an important part of it at the moment. Pochettino is someone who strongly believes in psychology. You get that from reading his book. He's a firm believer in all things that affect a player's mentality leading up to a game. I think he's got a lot wrong in the last few games, psychologically. I think when Kane was out injured, Heung-min Son took on so much extra responsibility. He was the guy that was going to get us through that period when Kane wasn't there. And he was wonderful. He was absolutely wonderful. And since Kane's come back, Son has dropped. And for me, that comes down to Pochettino not doing his job in preparing Son, in particular, for the next game. And what I mean by that is, this is not a slight on Son, because I think what he's shown there is normal human behaviour. But with Kane being back on the pitch, there's a tendency to think, okay, I don't need to do what I was doing to the same degree because Kane's there and he can shoulder some of that burden. But actually, Kane's just back from an injury. We can't just rely on Kane to be getting all of our goals, although we have. And actually, what Pochettino should have done is get around Son and say, what you've done over the past month is incredible and I just need you to keep pushing for another month until Harry's fit and firing and back. And I feel as though that hasn't happened and Son's performances have really, really dropped off. They've fallen off a cliff edge. And as I say, this is not a slight against Son at all. I think that's perfectly normal human psychology. But what you've just touched on there, Nathan, as well, to me, I do think Pochettino has to shoulder a lot of the responsibility. And another factor is the way that he behaved towards Mike Dean. This is marginally controversial, so apologies for bringing disrepute to our podcast, boys, but I have absolutely no sympathy with Pochettino over that incident at all. I think the way he behaved with Dean, storming onto the pitch over what was a legitimate 50-50 call for officials, he let himself down and he showed how rattled he was. And as a manager, once you show weakness like that, I think everything suffers. And I think he really shot himself in the foot with that. Not just with the way the mentality affects players, but then also not being on the touchline, which is something that Bardi mentioned. So, Bardi, do you think that really had a tangible impact on this Southampton match? Poch not being there barking orders?
Yeah, I just want to stand next to you on your point. I love getting on a hill and dying on it, but I want to stand with you on this point that I think Pochettino was out of order. And you can talk as much about his good behaviour and his attitude towards referees since he's been in this country, but it means nothing that if you act out, you can then not go back and say, look how good I was then, because it doesn't take into account. But I think that probably has an impact on his players, on the way they see him and the way he handles himself. He's meant to be their kind of standard bearer of like behaviour. And it's got to have an impact on the 90 minutes of a game. Otherwise, we'd see more managers spend the full 90 minutes up in the stands, because we know it's a better view. We know you're able to see the game better. Like if, when you go to the stadium yourself, sometimes you prefer, some people prefer to be lower because they prefer the atmosphere. Other people, me sometimes as well, I like to be higher so I can see how the players are moving. And we know footballers, they're children. And if you give them an excuse to act out or misbehave, basically the teacher wasn't there. It was a substitute teacher in Jesus Perez, and we saw what the players were, what they did. Manchester United are a prime example. As soon as the players lose respect for the teacher, then it's gone. And then Solskjaer now is not doing anything special, but he's got these players running for him. So I think we give footballers an excuse to misbehave and not perform, and they'll take it. And that's kind of what they did on Saturday. The game was there. Take it, win it, destroy Southampton, because they were all over the place.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And I wonder if Pochettino's whole hard done by act with Mike Dean fed into that as well. Nathan, do you buy into this at all?
I'm actually sort of kind of a fan of the manager being up in the stands. I think that just makes a lot more sense to me. I remember
colour me surprised.
I remember sort of Sherwood going up in the stands back in the day and getting a lot of grief for it, but I think that that's where you have the best sort of view of the shape and the space and the time, and yeah, you can have a member of staff up there looking for you and compiling video for you and all of that, but I think there are at the very least there are potential upsides to having your manager up there, so I don't know if that. I also don't know what it's like to be a player on a pitch with a manager on the touchline. So maybe that is a huge impact.
Yeah, I don't think there's any right or wrong answer on this. To be honest, I think that there's just a whole bunch of factors that probably had an impact on the psychology. Not least that we played pretty well in the first half against Southampton, and we probably should have been 2 or 3 up.
Yeah.
And perhaps then we did take our foot off the pedal. And so let's get into the nitty-gritty of that game. Nathan, is there anything specifically tactically that you think went wrong in the second half?
So I don't know if it was actually on half-time or shortly after. Maybe it was actually on half-time. But Hasenhüttl brought off Austin and Romelu for Sims and Long, who are both sort of much pacier players and the equivalent, and they started to play longer over the top, longer to long, and play earlier, and also utilise Sim's sort of high energy, and his through ball game is also really strong, and just sort of gave a threat in behind and more of a buzz. And I think that they also, with sort of fresher legs up front, were more effective in their counter-pressing. And I just think that generally swung momentum in Southampton's direction, and once it went, it stayed gone.
Yeah, I think what Southampton did was basically, it wasn't smart because they ended up winning, but it wasn't the most like kind of delicate tactical manoeuvre. It was basically what Burnley did to us, keep forcing our defenders to turn and run towards their own goal. What we should have done is just counter it by sitting deeper and almost like just invite them onto us. Like we kind of did against Dortmund. We were nice and compact. We closed up the gaps. But I think also Dier ran out of legs. Dele ran out of legs.
Yeah.
And Lucas remained wasteful from the first minute. I would have taken Lucas off at half time because he had them on. He had them worried, but he was producing nothing. So he needed to go and bring Son on. And if Son had been playing that first half, Southampton are dead.
I'm struggling to disagree with that. I felt Lucas started the game well. He looked really energised and he looked lively. He looked like he was willing to commit players and it was working well. That very quickly faded and he was absolutely horrendously bad in the second half. He basically did nothing until he came off. I feel like Lamela would have actually been a really useful sub in this game just to add a bit of fight and steel and just put some tackles in and slow down their press. Anything to disrupt, because it was clear, and this is a very common problem under Pochettino. It's clear that something's building, but he doesn't do anything to impact it until it's too late. And then, you know, as fans, you're then more frustrated because you can see what's happening in front of you. You can see that Southampton are building ahead of steam. They're probably going to equalise. They're probably then going to score again. I mean, as it turned out, I think we got a little unlucky in terms of the way they scored, given that Eriksen had already hit the bar from a really good free kick in the first half. Then Ward-Prowse takes a free kick where he shifts the ball forward, 15 yards? Was it? It looked outrageous to me. How far forward did that ball go, Bardi?
I don't know, but it was. If you could have asked Ward-Prowse the most perfect place on the pitch where he could put the ball, he basically picked it, you know. Where the foul occurred, he wouldn't have been able to have done that from there.
Exactly. And the defending for the first goal was pretty horrendous as well. I think we have to agree.
I think we miss Winks a lot because Winks is very smart on the ball. He can take the ball, beat a man under pressure. Whereas Dyer, he was fine in the first half. And I'm not a huge Dyer fan, but the moment his legs went, he just started going long. And he's pulled out one pass maybe in his career, which was from long distance. The rest of the time, it was just going nowhere near Kane. And the gap between Kane and the forwards and the rest of the team, it was, I don't know, man. You could have had a carnival in the space between them.
So let's talk about happier times to end on a high note. Because I thought the Dortmund performance in midweek was absolutely sensational. It was one of my favourite Spurs performances of the season. I was so impressed with how the whole team played and handled themselves in that match. Nathan, let's start with you. What did we do so well in that Dortmund match?
I think we offered something of a threat early on. There was a slight tactical tweak where originally we were playing sort of a flat front two and both of them were dropping into defence to help out. But then once we turned the ball over, we didn't have anywhere to send it. So we changed that around. So Son came deep and Kane stayed long. But we still weren't offering a huge amount. And I think that we adapted at half time. We moved to four across midfield, with Son becoming a winger and Eriksen moving over to the right. And just said, you know what, we've got three goals in our favour and you've got 45 minutes to turn this around. I bet you can't do it. We were smart, we were sensible, we were calm. And in contrast to the Southampton game, we really cared. I really cared. Again, it's hard to get too upset at the players for only sort of caring half the time when that is my own emotional response. I'm really excited about the Champions League going forward.
And it must have been so draining psychologically, that Dortmund game, having, you know, the build-up to it is draining enough, but then being under the cosh for 90 minutes and having to stay so focused, so switched on, just drains your energy mentally and physically. It was such a brilliant professional performance from our players. I was so pleased. One thing I don't think you mentioned there that I've not seen us do, I don't think, under Pochettino, is we basically played a flat back five. Davis and Aurier were so, you know, withdrawn. They didn't do a whole lot of attacking in that game, and it worked really well. I thought it completely restricted the space that Sancho and Guerrero had to work in. Royce was the one finding pockets of space, but Pochettino, contrary to what I've said about not adjusting things, he was really proactive. He said, okay, I can see that Royce is getting space here. I'm going to drag Son back into midfield. I'm going to make it a narrow four. And Sissoko is essentially going to be in that position that Royce keeps finding himself in. And it worked brilliantly. It stopped the majority of their positive moments. And I was so, so pleased with that performance. Kane, obviously, absolutely sensational when he had that moment. When Sissoko put him through, you just never felt like he was going to miss.
He's been so good since he came back from injury. He's looked so fresh and sharp, contrasting with the rest of the squad, obviously. But it goes without saying, but it's so good to have him back.
It really is. And I have to say, first half against Southampton, it was so good to have Dele back as well. And those two linking up, that is one thing that gives me a bit of positivity. If we're thinking about the top four race and the run-in, I feel like this little break now, this international break, the players aren't going to be around at the training ground for the whole time, sure, but there's going to be a lot of days that Pochettino has time to work on stuff. And he is training ground manager. He's someone who does a lot of work with the players on systems, on strategy, on philosophy. And he needs that time and will hopefully see benefit from that. Now, the downside of that is we play Liverpool next, which is not the ideal match. But there are things to be cheerful about. We've got time to get players back fit in time for that. So, you know, against Liverpool, we could actually run out potentially our best 11. That's the first time that would have happened in a hell of a long time. That's assuming that Winks is fit again. With that in mind, what do we do with our midfield? Who do we play in midfield against Liverpool? What a question, yeah. Eh? Because we've not often had Sissoko, Dier, and Winks being available at the same time, and you know Winks and Sissoko being in good form. You kind of think you need Dier against Liverpool. Probably to match up to their three.
I posed this question to Twitter a few weeks ago saying, look, if these are the... We've got, you know, four players, three positions, Ericsson in the mix as well, and a couple of people did vote for him. Who do we drop? And Dier was by far the favourite to be dropped. I think purely for tactical reasons, I'm less certain. I understand that Dier is the most out-of-form player of that bunch, but we've been crying out for a defensive midfielder all season. You might get some hassle for this, but I would like to see how we look without Sissoko. Now, Liverpool probably isn't the game to do that because you want his energy and his ball-carrying ability and his sort of transitional threat. So it's probably not the game to try it, but I would be interested to see how a Dier, Winks and Eriksen midfield looked at some point. Maybe that's too lightweight. Maybe we do need Sissoko always at all times for his carrying when we don't have a player like him. But I would like to at least see it experimented with again.
Interesting. I think Sissoko is essential against Liverpool, but I fully take your point. I do like the idea of Winks and Dier together in the pivot. Bardi, you said you had some positive feelings. Let's end on those. Tell us what are our reasons to be cheerful?
As you mentioned, the Dele Kane relationship is back. They just seem to know where each other are. There was one little flicked header from Dele that went through to Kane, who I thought he could have done a little bit better with against Southampton. So there's stuff like that that makes me feel positive. The way we reacted to the press from Dortmund and the stress of the tie, we didn't make any mistakes. Lloris was impeccable. So there's a lot to be positive of, and it's kind of like become the Premier League is now the League Cup for Pochettino, and you just get that kind of League Cup, FA Cup yeah. vibe now off his teams, which is really wrong because we're still miles away from winning the Champions League. And if you're putting all your hopes and dreams on winning the Champions League, my friend, that's a big dream. I know you shoot for the stars and stuff, but that's quite a horse to be
echoes of glory, mate.
Yeah, but that's true. I mean, yeah, I would take finishing fifth. I'd take finishing 17th. Well, no, maybe not 17th. I'll take finishing trying to work out which one gets you relegated. I'd take finishing 16th and winning the Champions League. That
boys, I do feel slightly better. So thanks for this.
We're here to help you, Chris. That's all, mate.
Cheers, guys. Cheers. We'll end it there, boys. But we've got some podcasts coming up soon that we've been planning for a while. Bardi, you put together one about fullbacks, which I'm very excited to record. But also, we're going to do a Champions League look back podcast at some point as well, which will be fun. So listen out for those. We've also got an exciting announcement coming soon. But I'll just dangle that carrot and I'll leave it there. Ooh. Thank you very much, Bardi.
Thank you, Windu.
And thank you, Nathan.
Nice one, mate.
And speak to you both soon. Thanks for listening. I'm just recording a quick addendum because I forgot to say something which I wanted to say on the podcast, which was a very big thank you to Paul Duffy. Paul is an Extra Inch listener, a Dubliner living in Boston, and he did something this week which he didn't have to do and which was hugely appreciated. So I just wanted to say thank you to him for that. You're clearly an excellent human being, Paul. It's the fight in. It's the fight in.
Interesting, mate, yeah.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts.
Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.